Get ready. Here comes another great podcast from the Norfolk Chambers of Commerce. Connecting, supporting, and giving voice to every business in Norfolk.
Welcome to our Norfolk Chambers podcast. I'm your host, Hayes Carver. And in today's podcast, we are chatting to the brilliantly energetic Cathy Ennis, director and founder of Little Piggy. So, Cathy, in terms of an introduction, you have so many incredible strings to your bow. The wonderful difficulty for me is knowing actually where to start with you. You're absolutely an ideas person, 20 plus years experience in business. You're an author, a mentor, an entrepreneur. And I'm so excited to talk to you today. We have the best chats ever. And you're one of our most active Chamber membership superstars. So thank you so much for joining me today.
It's my absolute pleasure. And I think the interesting thing about that summary of all of the things that I do and have done is just basically another way of saying I'm a bit old, because I've been around for a long time and I've done lots of things. And I do always say, you know, I spent the first 20 years of my career in the public sector, and I know it gets a little bit of a thumbs down in some places, but actually I learned an awful lot of stuff that I now take for granted. But when I'm talking to business owners that maybe haven't had that grounding, as I say, I take them for granted, but it seems to be news to some people. So, you know, I always say that was a great thing. I'm also incredibly inquisitive. I want to know how things work, not by reading a manual, that is anathema to me, but by actually pressing buttons and seeing what happens. So I've done a lot of button pressing over my career. And so what is it they say about a jack of all trades, but master of none?
I love that about the button pressing. I think that's right. When you want to learn something, you want to deep dive into it rather than read a manual. You remember more just by doing it yourself, don't you? Yes. There's a piece on your website, I think it does sum up all of your abilities and your incredible talent. And it says thousands of people are coming up with brilliant ideas. They're spotting gaps in the market. They're transitioning from employee to entrepreneur, and they're turning their hobbies into successful businesses. I mean, I think that sums up COVID for a lot of people, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
The lockdown, everything they've done. And you help those people turn their ideas into brilliant and profitable businesses and working with them. And it is so easy to see how passionate you are about what you do. So could you talk a little about why and when you started Little Piggy?
Yeah, sure. I think I was never, having my own business was never on my agenda. I grew up in a time where, and in an environment where other people had businesses, and I thought that you had a business if your parents had a business. So I didn't realise that sort of ordinary folk could actually do it. And so I went on the normal treadmill of school, some exams, which surprised me more than anybody else, went off to university, had a good few years there. I didn't learn anything that fitted me for a job per se, but I really enjoyed it. And then I fell into a career after that, and I spent 20 years in the public sector. So my main career was working in further and higher education. So I did do some teaching. I got a teaching qualification while I was there. But my main thing was around learning resources management, managing libraries and media resources, but also information literacy. So people could understand what information was and use it effectively. So I did that for quite some time. I worked for a while for a charity, which was a professional association as well. So I got a lot of good experience. I got a lot of opportunities, and it allowed me to travel. I've spoken at conferences across Europe and in Scandinavia. And so I had a really good grounding there. But while I was doing that, I was your typical, what we now call side hustler. When I was in the last few years of the job that I had at the charity, I went off and I trained, of all things, to become an image consultant. And I'll tell you the story of why it was an image consultant another day. But I went off and I trained as an image consultant more because I was really interested in it as a theory rather than it as a business. But it did actually turn into a business, which is what I wasn't expecting. And that's how I sort of fell into entrepreneurship. And I did that for quite some years, but it very quickly transitioned into personal branding. So I was working with people on their personal messaging. So how they spoke, what they spoke about, how they presented themselves in, you know, both personally, but in person as well. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, so I spent quite a long time doing that. And that allowed me to get to transition from employee to entrepreneur. So there was quite a few years while I was running both of them simultaneously. And it was when I transitioned out, go and have a look at my website if you want to see what actually happened. But I had a couple of bad, really bad experiences. But pulling myself up by my bootstraps, things started to get better. And I then started being asked by people, how did you do that? I've got this problem and I'm not sure how to get myself out of this problem. Or I want to be able to do what you're doing with that thing. How do I do it? And I just used to have cups of coffee with people and tell them how to do it, until a friend of mine said, how much money are you earning from that? Which is something I say to my clients now a lot of the time. And I said, I'm not earning anything from it. He said, well, you've got a full diary and the money is only trickling into the bank account. So he said, you need to start charging. Isn't what you're doing mentoring? So that's when things started to change. And it's really when Little Piggy was born, because up until that point, I was trading under my own name, Kathy Ennis. I was thinking I needed to make some changes to the business. It was moving towards mentoring. I did go out and I got myself some mentoring qualifications, but I felt that I wanted to try and explain something about what it is that I do. So the nursery rhyme about this little piggy went to market came into my head, not because I'm a marketer, but because I get businesses ready to go to market. This is one of the key things that I find with a lot of businesses that I work with, is that they've gone out marketing something before they know what that something is. And that's when they get into a few difficulties. So for me, Little Piggy is about going back to the basics. What is it you're selling and who is it you're selling to? Do they want it? If they want it, how much will they pay for it? Let's get the business working and then we can tell everybody about how brilliant it is and start selling it to them.
Yeah, and I think that's really interesting where you said you were having coffees with people and kind of giving away that knowledge of yours for free. But it goes back to what you said earlier, where it's not until you actually think about all the skills you have that you don't realise how much you know, because it's just in your head. And then to discover, actually, yes, that's a career for me to help these people.
In my career, the whole of my career before business was about somebody comes to me with a problem and they need a solution. It was free at the point of use. My role was to help them find the solution to that problem. So that's really, that runs through me like words through a stick of rock in that sense. If somebody's got a problem, I've got to help. But what I came to realize in business is that I needed to put some money around it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to pay for my grocery shopping. It becomes, when I was an employee, I got paid. So it wasn't free, the stuff I was giving them, but it was free when they got it. Then when I started my own business, I had to think about, well, I do know this stuff. I have got these skills. I can help this person. I know what the issue is that they've got, and I can actually spot from 100 yards what they should be doing, but I have to charge them for that, because otherwise I won't have a roof over my head.
No, and you'll have a lot of needy friends who are always asking you questions.
One of my clients that I was working with earlier in the year said, you know, one of the things that came out of our work together was no more mates rates, and friends and family expecting stuff for free. And this is where sometimes as a business owner, and particularly if you've gone into business perhaps maybe later in life, this is sometimes where it becomes quite difficult, because you have to grow a bit of a hard shell, because everything you give away for free, and I'm not saying you shouldn't give things away for free, you should, but it should be within a structure that you've created. So if you want to give away free advice, how many days a year are you going to do that for? How many days a year can you afford to do that for before it starts affecting whether you can pay your mortgage, you know, drive a car, put petrol, those kinds of things. So it is structurally there. So we have to become a little bit hard in that sense and say, look, this is a business. It's not a hobby.
And mates rates, it's such a difficult area, isn't it? Because the definition of a mate is so-and-so's friend, and it's just a minefield. I think those mates rate or those freebies that you do for people end up being the most difficult and the most complicated ones.
Incredibly demanding. I was talking to a girl I know who is a nail technician, And she used to be mobile, so she would go to people's homes and she would do their nails, from, you know, lovely extensions or shellac. And apologies to any guys listening to this if you're not 100% sure what I'm talking about. But it is a very sort of qualified and really sort of complicated process, and the equipment and the materials cost a lot of money. And she was going around and she was doing these for mates and extended family at half the price that she would charge in a salon. But what she wasn't looking at was the fact that she was also having to pay petrol. She was also having to take time at the front and the end of the session for setup and clear down. It was having wear and tear on her car. So where she might say, OK, I'm going to do this for you for £20 rather than £40. In fact, she was coming out with negative money because all of the peripheral stuff around it was costing her more than £20. So, and this is the kind of thing that I want people to really start thinking about in those, particularly if you're side hustling, looking to move out of employment, or if you're somebody who has not had a business before, but you've got a really great hobby or something you're really interested in and you can see that there's a market for it. That's brilliant. But you do need to put that sort of hard-nosed businessy bit in the back. I talk about moving from surviving to thriving. And I think that there are a lot of businesses that are surviving at the moment, pandemic or no pandemic. I'm not even thinking about that. I'm just thinking generally there are a lot of people who are doing everything they should be doing and working silly hours every day for survival rather than comfort. And I want everyone to be comfortable.
And actually, if you're in survival mode, you can do that for a while, but eventually you'll crash.
You can't. Been there, done that. Yeah, absolutely. And everything I say is based on personal experience. I would never assume to tell somebody something or to talk through something with somebody that I didn't have knowledge of and or personal experience of, because that's not fair to them if they put their faith in you as somebody to support them and help them.
And you definitely share all of that. You're a prolific blogger on your website. Actually, you've mentioned Side Hustle a couple of times. I love that. And we spoke earlier, but the pandemic's absolutely provided opportunities for people to develop side hustles and reevaluate. COVID's taught people to reevaluate their careers and their futures. So you mentioned side hustles. Has there been a big surge for you in people coming to you in these areas? So it's side hustles, solopreneur, which I'm really interested in, and freelancing.
Yeah, and I think there was quite a lot of it happening before the pandemic. I think that particularly with younger people, now there is a questioning about where they stand in the world. And I suppose the question is this it? Because, you know, they go to work for somebody and then they fancy having a year touring Australia or Thailand or something like that. That would never have happened when I was first in work, because you worked for somebody basically until they gave you a gold watch and you went away. That world doesn't exist anymore. Younger people, there is this thing about, I can do this. If I want to, I can do this. I think where it's changed now is in the more mature end of things as well. And I think what's happened within the pandemic, particularly with people having maybe for the first time experience of working from home, they realise how many hours there are in the day that were what I might call wasted hours. I know when I lived and worked in London, my office was 11 miles away from my home, and the journey lasted between an hour and a half and 2 hours each way every day. So there was 3 to 4 hours a day where, okay, I could maybe read a book or something like that, but it was not productive time. Whereas a lot of people now who've had experience of working from home thought, actually, you know, I can do my 7 hours, and then I've got these hours where I can do this thing that I'm really interested in. And maybe if I do this thing I'm really interested in, I can sell it. And then on from there, you get, actually, I love selling that thing. I want to do more of that than I do working for this person. Maybe I can do that. And I think that's where it's starting to happen. And I think, as I said, I had inquiries and worked with quite a few people who were mid-40s upwards. I mean, I was 41 when I started my first business. And I think there is no limit to the age that you can be. And I've written about that as well in the blog in terms of the maturepreneur. You know, just flipping more, go for it. if there's something you want to do, don't put it off and say, oh, maybe not me, or I can't afford it, or I don't know enough about this, because there's help and support out there, paid for and free.
And also, I think it's when you might have 7 hours in the office, but an hour of that is, hello, catching up. What did you see on TV? Water cooler chats. I think lots of people have found how much more productive you are working from home because you don't have those distractions. So yes, you might be able to put your washing out, but actually you've got so much done in the hour before.
Yeah, I think I read a report some years ago about open plan offices that said that the average amount of time actually worked in an open plan office is 2 hours a day. I worked in an open plan office and I couldn't work in an open plan office. I'm not somebody who can listen to music and work at the same time. And those kinds of things. I do need a little bit of quiet to concentrate. I know it's not the same for everybody, but I actually negotiated with my employer way back then. Could I do some work from home days? Because I got so much more done. And so, yeah, I think there's that. And I think there's also, you know, you mentioned the whole thing about the solopreneur. And I think one thing to consider about the makeup of business in Britain is the fact that it's probably not what people think it is. Because when people think about business, they quite often think about the small to medium size, or maybe the large size business. Yeah, so if we're looking at a small business, that's classed as a business that employs between 10 and 49 people. Medium business is 50 people to 250, and then a large business is over that. The vast majority of businesses in the UK fit within the micro area. So they fit within 9 or fewer people in the business. That's about 90-odd% of the British business landscape. Of that 90%, over 80% of those are one-person businesses. So the British economy is actually based on solopreneurs, people doing it for themselves, coaches, consultants, yoga teachers, personal chefs, you name it, nail technicians, beauty therapists. All of those are the people that actually keep the British economy going. Interestingly, they're the type of businesses that suffered through the pandemic. Well, sorry, it's a little bit soapbox. I don't think the government understands them. And also, they never get talked about. Never. Because everybody's talking about SMEs. And most businesses don't fall into that category. And I think that, and that's where they then fall out of support. And I think that for the Chamber, and I will give a woohoo to the Chamber, that's one of the things about that I found with the Norfolk Chamber, is the fact that it's welcoming to all, regardless of, you know, whether you're a sort of massive international conglomerate or whether you're the card maker from Snettisham. You know, there's no differentiation. The support is there regardless.
You know, we're here to support every business. And exactly like you say, not the 1,000 people in your business. I think the interesting thing about side hustles is, I guess, a natural and almost organic stepping stone to starting up a business. But actually, it's just a way of simplifying your life. How does that change marketing?
Well, I think the interesting thing is the number of businesses that are starting with that at the core and how important that is becoming. And I think that if you look at the reflection of it, I think it's also what's happening on our high street. And this was happening before the pandemic again, but I think it's been put onto overdrive, is the fact that the big barn shops were suffering. But what was happening is that you were having this underswell of small artisan providers. So because of a personal interest, we're quite interested in microbrewing. You know, looking around at the number of, even in our local area, the number of small microbreweries that are starting, or specialist artisan bakers, or people that are only selling smelly candles that are made out of a certain substance, and, you know, they'll only put them into glass. Right. So that seems to be the way that things are going. And those grassroots type businesses, they always start small. It doesn't mean they have to stay small. I'll give a shout out to Nikki from What a Hoot in King's Lynn, the gin distillery. From an idea at her home, they now have the most beautiful premises in King's Lynn. And if anybody's up there, you can do a tour. It's very good gin. From sort of, you know, it's the old acorn adage. From a little acorn, an oak can grow. And I think that's where we need to be putting the support, I think, is that nurturing. And I think that going back to the role of the Chamber, and what I've experienced as a newbie to the county, is the fact that there was no questions asked about, you know, only in as much as how much I paid for my membership. You know, there was no questions asked about, you know, are you a real business? And I've been to things where people have said, no, you can't join because you're not a real business.
The definition of a real business has changed.
Well, to some people, a real business is only a business that is an employer, and they don't see you employing yourself as being real. Business organisations, some of them can be a bit snooty. Let's just put it that way.
We're not snooty.
Not snooty in the slightest.
So many of our chamber members will have watched your virtual webinars, and actually our non-members, because they're all on our website and on the Norfolk Knowledge Hub. You've done so many amazing webinars for us, and I'm sure people will know from listening to you today the way you explain things. It's just so refreshing the way you demystify all of the topics that you talk about, and it's not patronizing, it's just clear, concise, and it makes people feel like, oh, I can learn that, I can understand that. We have such excellent feedback from our viewers, the way you talk about SEO marketing, LinkedIn, and your Facebook help. And actually, by doing those virtual webinars, it took away the geographical boundary. So I'm just interested, did that lead to more opportunities for you and Little Piggy?
I think the interesting thing was people contacting me because of those that I'd not had any interaction with. And I'm totally there with you that boundaries of geography were swept away. And I think for me, that was amazing. And I have worked with a couple of people as a consequence who have said, oh, I saw you on that thing. And that's excellent. And I think for me, going back to the fact that, you know, I got a teaching qualification, for me, it's all about, it's no good doing something if the people there can't go away and do one thing different as a result of it. Yes, when you do a freebie webinar or when you do something for somebody, of course, it's part of your marketing. It has to be integral to that. But for me, the end result has to be, yes, I get myself in front of people, but it has to be that they learn something as a result of it. It's not just you can get these answers if you come and work with me. It can't be that. So, yeah, I think that was great. I think the other thing about it is that, you know, we live in a county that isn't renowned for its roads. and even the closest place seems to be about half an hour drive away. It does mean that we can encompass a much wider community, you know, and I think that for me has been absolutely fantastic, because there have been people from all over the place, not even in the UK. I mean, I had somebody from Sri Lanka get in contact with me. So yeah, it's just
you're based in Hunstanter, which is such a beautiful part of Norfolk. And it must have been an amazing place to spend lockdown. I'm just incredibly jealous of that. So, and you moved there from Hertfordshire. So I'd love to know, what was the transition like moving from there to Norfolk? And were we friendly to you?
It's really funny. I spent part of my childhood in Suffolk. So I spent sort of my some early years in Bury. But I'm primarily a Londoner. And it's a really strange transition, because I grew up in West London but could never afford to live there. So I had to move to East London before it became trendy. So I could afford to live there when I went there. I couldn't afford to live there now. And we just kept moving east. And I knew Hunstanton from when I was a kid, because we used to come up here for the hot donuts and things, you know, along the prom there. I just used to drag Dave up here, sort of memories of childhood. Oh, that's where we used to go. That's what we used to do. And we just fell in love with the place. And we said, you know, if ever we have the opportunity, if ever there's a chance that we can, this is where we want to be. And, you know, unfortunate circumstance in terms of somebody passing away was actually a fortunate circumstance for us, because it meant that we could afford to move. So basically we lived at one end of the A10 and we just drove straight up. And then turned right, and that's how we ended up in where we are. So and in terms of being made to feel welcome, I found it really interesting. I was dreading it a little bit, because even though we'd moved a few times, it'd always been within a geographical area where I could travel to places and people that I'd known for a long time. This was the first time where we were significantly distanced from that. And I was a little bit concerned. I was a little bit concerned what would happen with the business, etc. But it didn't prove to be that way. I mean, I think one of the first people, Hayes, that actually contacted me was you. So you want to come along to our session at the Folks in Lynn? And by the way, would you like to talk? And I thought, oh God, I haven't even met anybody yet. And yeah, I'll get up, I'll talk on a sixpence, you know, I'll talk about anything anywhere. But, and that was really nice. And it was really, it was very, very welcoming. And I did feel part of a community. So I haven't looked back. I think one of the things that I do recognise, because I still do quite a lot of work in and around London, is there seems to be far fewer opportunities in this county. I mean, for example, we will take networking as an example. I could have networked from 5 a.m. in the morning till midnight, nearly 7 days a week. It wasn't the case when I got here. If I wanted support or to go to like physical events that were, say, free business support, again, I could have gone to those any day of the week. That's not necessarily what we see up here. I do feel sometimes we're a little bit of a forgotten county. Sometimes that's a good thing, but I think in terms of business sense, it could be a bad thing. But as far as looking back and it being either a positive or a negative, it's massively positive experience. I would never go back to where we were before. I absolutely adore where I am.
I think what comes across certainly from the chamber members is how collaborative everybody is. It's a real community. That I think what really stands out, we've had chats with other chambers who are amazing and brilliant, and I know they will all feel the same, but obviously being a Norfolk person, I just love the support that people have. At the beginning of the pandemic, so many businesses reached out to each other to help, and it hasn't stopped. And you mentioned the networking, certainly as a chamber coming out of pandemic, and you know, we're easing back into networking. You must come to our paddleboarding, Kathy.
I think I must be a gremlin. Don't get me wet.
Absolutely. I think as a chamber, we're kind of fighting those preconceptions of what people think of chamber events.
And also what people think of chambers, because my experience of them in the past was, you know, and this is no insults intended, but it was old men in suit.
And there's nothing wrong with old men in suits.
Absolutely not. But if it was to the exclusion of young women in frocks, let's put it that, or you know, for me about the Norfolk Chamber, the thing that I found is its diversity in terms of the people that are engaged with it, the types of businesses that they're running, and it is that very big welcoming thing as well. Other chambers that I'd had experience of, I didn't feel welcomed in the way that I did. And also, I think, you know, you were saying about the community spirit. That's one of the things that I feel about Norfolk, really, is that it's not like a lot of other counties. I think because it is out on a limb, because it's not looked after perhaps generally as much as some other counties, people tend to day, and you know, particularly in my area, for example, everybody seems to have gone to the same school. So everybody knows everybody, and that's why they want to put their hands out and help and support, because they're really proud of their environment.
Yeah, so with the networking, we were recently splashing around on a very wet day, weren't we, at Blickling. And I think that's what we love to say, is what you need is what we do. And the feedback is, let's have more events where we're outside, where we feel safe. Networking event. We're doing another one in West Norfolk at the end of September.
Yeah, it's, I can't go to that one because, would you believe it, that's the day that I'm actually down in London. But you're walking through the area where they're looking to spend the money from the Public Realm grant, aren't you? Really chuffed about the plans that they've got for Lynn. I think we had some visitors up a couple of weeks ago, people we haven't seen for 2 years, and it was amazing. And we took them into Lynn, and the only part of Lynn they'd ever seen before was the station and the shopping centre. And we took them through to the old town, and we walked around, and we were showing them things, and we were looking at all the history plaques on the wall and things. And they were gobsmacked. And I think that, for me, anybody who's thinking about having a nice walk, doing a bit of networking, get on the networking event in Lynn in a few weeks' time, because I think you'll really, really enjoy it. So, but I love Blickling. I love it as a place anyway. But, you know, it was learning about trees.
He was an amazing chap.
Oh, that was brilliant. I really loved it. And I came back and I was saying to people, oh, you know, when that thing grows on the side of the tree, that's a good thing. Don't take it off.
I love that you were so excited about it. So another event, which is a huge networking event we've got coming up, is B2B.
Hurrah!
You're really involved in that, aren't you, this year?
I run my business, Little Piggy, and I have a very good friend who is based in Essex who runs a social media company, 24 Fingers. That's my friend Emma Good. But we also have a joint business where we work together, so we mash up our skill set. It's called 24 Degrees. And we're members of the chamber as well.
Kathy, I could just talk to you for hours and hours and hours, as we know. Thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been fantastic to have you here. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kate.
To the Norfolk Chamber of Commerce podcast. Connecting, supporting, and giving voice to every business in
Norfolk. And please do join me next week. Until then, keep connecting and take care.